And hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the Keith Costas Podcast. I'm Bob Ramsey. And of course, starring Keith Costas, MLB Network analyst. Keith, it's been a few weeks. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Rammer. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing really well. And we've been on hiatus since the All-Star break. And things have really been heating up since then. And this week in particular, in the last couple of days, with the trading deadline approaching, there are a lot of things to talk about. And as we start, I guess we should probably jump right into the contenders and those trying to buy or sell. Is anything standing out to you as a bit of a surprise or a shocker as we wind down to the last few days?
Well, I don't know about a huge surprise or a shocker, but the move that the Mariners made yesterday certainly made plenty of waves, trading away Kendall Graveman. And that's been kind of the whole MO of the team out there in Seattle. I know they're kind of an afterthought on a national scale, but they're right in the thick of the race, just one game out of a playoff spot, and they have the best record in the majors in one-run games. Obviously, their closer is a big part of that, and then all of a sudden, they turn around and trade him to the other clubhouse, to the Astros, who they're playing in the series. So there's always some twists and turns in the trade deadline. That was certainly one of them, but I think that as we get going this week, it'll be kind of more of a traditional trade deadline with lots and lots of big names out there. So it's always exciting when there's a shark in the water like Max Scherzer or Chris Bryant or some of the other players that have been bantied about. So I think it'll be pretty active this week and should be fun the next 48 hours or so.
Yeah, talk about the Mariners and maybe another example of a little bit of surprise, Tampa sending Hill to the Mets. And you say, Well, sometimes it's a team saying, we have enough coverage in a given area, catching or offense or pitching or closing. And other times it's, we hate to lose him. We're going to lose him in a couple of months anyway. We think we can still compete if, fill in the blank, they can do that. And so that sort of nuance makes it really interesting, trying to follow along in a GM's mind.
Yeah, and that was sort of the logic that Jerry DePoto put out there for the fans and the players. If you read some of the quotes coming out of Seattle, the players were not happy, maybe not attaching their names to the quotes, but not holding back with the actual quotes they gave in terms of what the reaction was in the clubhouse to that move. But DePoto said, you know, hey, this is all part of a bigger picture over the next 72 hours. And they went ahead and made a move for Tyler Anderson, who looked like he was headed to the Phillies. So the Mariners add. But yeah, you talk about the Rays. I mean, the Rays are always stocked with pitching, as the Cardinals know, having made some trades with them for pitching recently. So they kind of step out of their normal MO and go get a huge slugger and a Nelson Cruz. And at the same time, tinkering with the pitching side of things, moving Rich Hill to the Mets, which I thought was a really good move for the Mets. And like we said, the Rays always seem to figure it out with the pitching equation. I'm sure they'll call up three guys that we've never heard of in September, and they'll end up pitching great for them in October, because that's just how the Rays do things.
Yeah. And talk about some of the other buyers out there, teams that are close. Well, let's talk about the big Padres move. They had, for all intent and purpose, a set lineup. They said, no, mm-hmm. We're going to add to it. And Will Myers goes on the bench, maybe a platoon situation. And so not afraid to say, we're going to get better. And if somebody loses at bats, this is about the team and winning.
Yeah, I love that move for the Padres. And you look at that division, you think about the Dodgers, what they've been over the last couple of years. You know, Chris Taylor might be their MVP this year. He's kind of an afterthought guy with all the star power they've had there, but a guy that moves all over the diamond. And you look on the AL side of things, Kike Hernandez has been absolutely on fire for the Red Sox, who's obviously been a big surprise. Also a guy who is with the Dodgers, obviously, the last handful of years, can move around. So Adam Frazier, that same kind of player, you know, he's more of a traditional second baseman than those guys are more utility guys. But that's kind of been the MO in that division. The Dodgers have proven that you can never have enough talent and you'll figure out a way to get them on the field, whether it's moving Muncy around to second and third and mm-hmm. using different guys at first base or whatever the matchups are there that they like. And I love that the Padres just went out and did that. And they've got, you look at their bench now, they basically have a bench full of guys that can play all over the place, switch hitters. I mean, they're just so versatile now, and they'll figure out where the pieces fit as they move along. I guess they're going to start Frazier out in left field, but they can play him at second base, play Cronenworth at first. They still got Profar and Jorge Mateo, and Caratini is a backup catcher, really a second catcher. They use more of a kind of tandem there, but a switch hitter who can match up with a lot of different guys. So I love that the Padres are just adding to the surplus. And to me, that's one of the biggest storylines of the season, obviously, but certainly in these next couple of days with the trade market, is all the action seems to be in the NL West. Scherzer saying that's where he wants to be. I mean, all the AL East teams are on him too, or at least kick the tires on him. And, you know, how quickly times have changed. It used to be the AL East is where all the power resides, and now all of a sudden everyone wants to go out west. So it should be fun watching those teams battle it out the next couple months and the next couple days to see who can get what players on the market.
And as good as the Dodgers are, they do need some help, don't they? I could even see a reliever going there. They're a really, really good team, but they recognize they have some flaws.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, the Giants, after a while, we've talked about what a surprise them and the Red Sox have been all year. But, I mean, they've played, what, 14, 15 games now with the Dodgers and played them basically even. The Giants have been up in the standings the whole way. So at a certain point, you got to acknowledge, you know, we've got three super teams in this division. So I'm with you. And the Dodgers dealing with some injuries like everyone has this season. Kershaw out. Obviously, Trevor Bauer is not an injury situation, but to be determined. I think the smart money's probably on not seeing him again for the rest of the year. No information there. That just seems to be trending in that direction. So, yeah, all of a sudden the Dodgers have needs, like you said, all over the place. Jansen's been shaky at the back of their bullpen. Every team could use a reliever. But, you know, I think it's going to come down to the Dodgers and the Giants for Scherzer. I mean, any of these teams would love to be in on him, but it feels like the Giants, especially with the money that they have coming off of the books, and you hear these reports that Scherzer might want to make, you know, some headway on an extension before he waives his 10-5 rights here. So the Giants are as well-positioned as anybody with, you know, north of $100 million probably coming off the books this offseason to go ahead and make Scherzer an offer that might entice him to accept that offer to San Francisco as opposed to any other potential destination.
Staying with the Dodgers, and this isn't really relative to the trade deadline, but what are the analysts saying? What are people in the know saying about the tragic season Cody Bellinger is having? I don't even know how do you explain it?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to explain. He's such an athletic guy, and we've seen such peaks and valleys from him. I mean, I know everyone remembers him bursting onto the scene, breaking the NL home run record for a rookie, and obviously has an MVP on his mantle. But lest we forget, a few years ago in the World Series against the Astros, he was a complete no-show. I mean, they just diced him up, and when he gets cold, he gets ice cold. I mean, I think he's something like 8-for-80 over the last few weeks, maybe last 22, 23 games or so. And Mark DeRosa was breaking him down this morning on MLB Central. And he, like I said, he's so athletic. And sometimes I feel like he gets a little overly reliant on his natural talent. And Mark had a great breakdown on him. And you go back a couple years when he was really going good, he kind of had more of his toe on his back foot was kind of more kind of pointed out towards the pitcher. He kind of had almost a cockeyed stance with his feet, and now he's just more kind of gliding through the ball and doesn't have a lot of stability on his lower half. So I'm not a hitting coach, but I listened to what Mark says on hitting, and he seemed pretty convinced that there's some mechanical things that he's just gotten away from. And like I said, he's just such a fluid athlete that he can still run into some 450 homers just kind of swinging from his heels like that. But, you know, when he gets in one of these ruts, he's so strikeout prone too when he's not going right that it can be ugly.
You know, it's funny when you talk about, to me, whenever a hitter changes, it seems like it either does really, really well, St. Louis, take a look at O'Neill and Bader, or it goes really south, St. Louis, Matt Carpenter from a few years ago has never really recovered from those swing changes, and now maybe Bellinger, whether he did it on purpose or he's developed bad habits. It can be kind of scary, but it is great to see when a hitter goes, all right, I got here to this level this way, but to get to the next level, I've got to make some changes, and they're successful at it. That's what makes the game fun, seeing guys grow in the game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's a little bit of a catch-22, and we've talked about this before. There's so much information in the game now, and there's so many different resources available to these players, whether it's all the high-speed cameras, all the new kind of Statcast and exit velocity-based data, or, you know, just whether it be the traditional approach-based stuff. I sometimes think that these players get almost overloaded, and it's a little hard for them to kind of remember. While obviously adjusting is important, it's kind of hard for them sometimes to keep in mind what got them there and have a real identity that they're working off of and tweaking that identity as opposed to trying to constantly reinvent themselves. So obviously Bellinger, as we talk about him, is a pretty distinct player when you think about his approach and his setup with that high stance and his high hands. I mean, it's hard, I think, for some of these players that have really unique approaches like that to look around and kind of, you know, even from the coaching staff, get a cue on what could get them back on track when they have such a distinct style and they get away from that a little bit. So hopefully Bellinger can get back to that high finish that produced all those home runs and not the swinging under, trying to loft the ball, strikeout swing that we've seen here lately.
Yeah. Hey, let's get back to trade week. And that is taking a look at the Cubs. Of all the names, their whole roster, basically, that everyone speculated is available, it seems to me Bryant and Kimbrel are the two that are likely. Would you say better than 50-50 they both leave the Cubs?
Yeah, I definitely think it's better than 50-50. And I agree with you that those are the two most intriguing, especially Kimbrel. I mean, he's back to – he might be having the best season of his career. I mean, it's hard to judge relievers, obviously, pitching in the small sample size. But, I mean, Kimbrel is lights out right now. And he's a guy who really hasn't had, for as great as he's been over the course of his career, his postseason big game resume – again, tiny sample size for these relief pitchers, but it's not great. So it would be great to see him get into a situation where he's contending and has a chance to impact – a race. And then Brian, I mean, a resurgent season, obviously got off to a very hot start. He's cooled off a little bit compared to where he was at in April and May, but the versatility that he's shown, going back to, you know, our Adam Frazier conversation, it's like a supercharged version of that. I mean, this guy can play all over and hit at an MVP level when he's right. So yeah, I think those are the two most intriguing. I'm not sure if Rizzo's going to move, but there's a lot of great fits for Rizzo that could be really intriguing. I mean, going back to Boston, that's been bantied about a bunch. And, you know, sometimes we grasp at that low-hanging fruit, but sometimes the simplest explanation is really the right one. And I think that is just a perfect fit. The Red Sox are obviously rolling, and they have gotten absolutely nothing from their first baseman. Leadoff was their other big problem, but I mentioned Kike earlier. He's kind of rectified that all himself the last 4 to 6 weeks or so. So first base is really the hole that they need to address. And Rizzo going back there, man, would that be intriguing. The Yankees have been talked about too. They're kind of in a situation similar to the Cardinals, where I think they have to weigh the calculus of how realistic their chances are given where they are in the standings right now, if they want to make that kind of an expenditure. But either one of those, getting him in a big market and kind of a change of scenery for Rizzo, is kind of the forgotten guy in this. And I think that he could really be re-energized. And I think he's got a lot left in the tank too. So I'm curious to see what happens with Rizzo here in the next couple of days.
Yeah. And you know, for me with Bryant, as I try and watch the game, seem to amaze me, their numbers aren't gaudy except the win total. And I'm wondering, and I don't know if there's a real matchup with prospects and things, but it seemed like Bryant would be the perfect fit for San Francisco.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of smoke there. They've got a lot of good players in their farm system. Farhan Zaidi got that thing rectified quickly. We did the futures game at the All-Star game a couple weeks ago, and there were a lot of Giants in that game that really stood out. And they've got a lot of choices on their hands too, like we mentioned earlier. They got a lot of money coming off the books. They still have so much of that core that won their last handful of championships there that are having good seasons. They could potentially walk after the year. So they've got a lot of decisions to make how they want to use that farm system. Are they going to re-up some of those guys and bring them back? And can they move some of that young talent? Are they kind of dead set on being really active in the free agent market next year? I mean, and it's the same deal with Scherzer. They could, if they like Bryant, they could try to move to extend him quickly because they're going to have so much financial flexibility. So They've got the next couple months on their radar in the short term. Obviously, the best team in baseball so far this year, so they got to put the pedal to the metal and try and win this year. But they're also, I think, going to be the most intriguing team over the next 6 months or so. So the next couple days are obviously going to give us some pretty good clues to how they're going to progress heading into the offseason as well. So Giants are probably the most intriguing team, and I think Bryant's a perfect fit out there. West Coast guy. Playing in that park when, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover in the outfield, which makes his versatility even more valuable. So, yeah, I'd love to see Bryant go to the Giants. And it does seem like that's the most smoke in terms of a fit so far for Bryant.
And we already talked about Scherzer staying with D.C. Would they really trade Trey Turner? Would they really move one of my favorite players? My gosh, he's a lightning rod.
I'm with you. Trey Turner has been unbelievable. I mean, you look at, you know, obviously it was a shortened season last year and he was nicked up with that finger injury in 19, but you just look at his last 162 games. I don't think many people would realize that Trey Turner is creeping up on 40-40 status over that last, you know, full sample size worth of games. Obviously incredible speed and puts the ball in play. You know, we've talked about that a lot, different ways to skin a cat. He's not a huge on base percentage guy, but he gets hits, which, shocker, hits are good. he gets a lot of them. So yeah, I'm with you. Trey Turner is an incredible player. There's been some kind of talk up here about the Yankees maybe going after him and more of a move geared towards the future, see if they can't convince him to stick around New York. But I mean, the Nationals, it's just that it's a money situation there. They've got Strasburg, who unfortunately really hasn't given him much since he re-upped on that mega deal, and they've still got a lot left to go on that. But then the elephant in the room is they're going to have to make an aggressive offer if they want to try and keep Juan Soto. And by all accounts, they're going to do everything they can to keep Soto there. So I guess the question is, when do they turn their sights towards the future and kind of reworking that core around Soto? And, you know, Turner has had some injury problems. I like him just as much as you. I don't know what banking on him in the long term when you're going to have to double down on a guy like Soto and already have a huge commitment to Strasburg is really the move for them. So the asking price is going to be huge. If I had to guess, I think he probably stays put. It's going to take too much to land that fish, but I think that they'd probably be open to it just for the reasons we talked about with all the future payroll commitments they're going to have.
And in the shortstop category, if you can't get Turner, do you set by you, I mean, any given team that's interested in a shortstop, do you turn your sights to Trevor Story?
Yeah, I thought Ken Rosenthal, and I helped him kind of look into some of these numbers earlier this week, had some really interesting points that he'd been hearing from some rival executives about Story in regard to his arm. And I think people that follow the Rockies and follow the star players in the game know he was on the IL earlier this year with a little elbow problem. It didn't really get much press, but you look at some of these numbers on his throwing metrics and his arm strength has absolutely disappeared. He was steady for his whole career. You know, StatCast looks at the top 10% of your throws. So you're not, you know, factoring in the throwing Yadier Molina out by 10 steps. Yeah. You're looking at your 10%. They look at the 10% of the hardest throws and use that to average out what they call max effort throws. And for his whole career, he was holding steady 86, 87 miles an hour, good arm strength. Last year, it dipped down in the low 80s. This year, it's in like the high 70s. So there's clearly something going on with his arm, and that has to be concerning if you're going to trade for him, considering he's already been on the IL this year, and he's not really having the greatest year either. So I love Trevor Story. When we do our top 10 players by position each offseason, I think I was the only holdout that had him ahead of Tatis coming into this year, a little misguided if you see how the season's played out. Now, big Trevor Story fan, but I think there's some troubling red flags for him there in terms of the immediate future.
So, Keith, with all the possible deals and all the moves that could be happening around Major League Baseball, $20, you're laying it on the table. This is the deal that's going to happen and have an impact.
I'm going to go out on a limb and go back to the one that I just said. I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but now I'm going to guarantee that it will happen for your $20 rim run. And I'll say Rizzo goes back to the Red Sox where he started his career. You know, just a guy that they've got good mojo going on in that clubhouse with Alex Cora being back in the mix there. Everything seems to be clicking. Like I said, that's the one hole that they have. Rizzo, a great clubhouse guy who's been a part of a similar culture, I think, in Chicago and Boston. There's a lot of kind of overlap there in terms of some Boston guys were in the mix with the Cubs in 16. Obviously, he's managed by a guy who spent time in both cities. He himself has been in the Red Sox organization, went to San Diego briefly in that Adrian Gonzalez trade. Kind of come full circle, feel-good story, and a great baseball move. Rizzo back to the Red Sox, $20 guarantee, but don't hold it.
Keith, it's been great talking to you again, and next week it'll be interesting. We'll see how the dust settles on all the deals, and then take a look and look forward to see who we think can best survive the dog days of August.